contribution is called Mic to the People, and that's a very serious thing to remember. KBOO is the only community radio source that you have that will bring it to you and bring you all the kinds of information and shows that KBOO brings to every community member and we all rely on. So keep in mind, please call 877-500-5266 and donate today. Every little bit counts, and every bit is appreciated.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Well, you know climate change is coming.
So if he goes out on strike, I'll definitely be there.
My name is Micah.
And my name's Valerie.
We're in seventh grade.
The reason why we are here is because we want a future for our generation.
The young people are the ones who realize, like, hey, you gotta stop this train or you're going over the edge.
KBOO will broadcast live from the climate strike in Portland this Friday, September 20th. Tune in after the film show for our live coverage of the rally and March for Climate Justice. This is an international action organized by students around the world to show the politicians and fossil fuel billionaires that the real power lies with the people. That's this Friday, September 20th on KBOO, 90.7 FM.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Daily Cafe, located at 902 Northwest 13th Avenue, open daily from breakfast to late lunch. Daily Cafe serves new American breakfast and lunch, along with wine spirits. Lunch was provided by Thai Pod, located at 2015 Northeast Broadway Street. Serving a full Thai cuisine menu, Thai Pod is open for lunch and dinner. Dinner was provided by Atlas Pizza, located at 710 North Killingsworth Street. Open from 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. or later every day. More information at atlaspizzapdx.com. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the City of Portland has funded a program to address the high volume of police responses to non-emergency situations involving homeless Portlanders.
Oregon becomes a leader in the nation for pushing for stricter gun storage laws.
And an intelligence officer made a formal whistleblower complaint accusing President Trump of making a promise to a foreign leader. And we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Claire Rosciato.
I'm Althea Billings.
Yesterday, water flooded all three floors of the guest section at McMiniman's Edgefield Hotel, forcing 200 guests to evacuate. The historic building that was once the site of a poor farm experienced such serious flooding due to sprinkler damage. Edgefield representatives believe this was damage caused by hotel guests and that no restaurants or bars were in any way damaged by the flood. Oregon could become the first state to have the strictest gun storage laws in the nation. Gun safety activists delivered 2,000 signatures to the Oregon's elections office with the hope that their measure will get on the 2020 ballot. The measure would require gun owners to use trigger locks, cable locks, or containers to store their guns. The measure also mandates that gun owners report lost or stolen firearms within 24 hours, except in the case of self-defense or in defense of someone else. The measure would make those who own guns liable for any injury resulting from an unsecured weapon. If the law passes, each violation would carry fines up to $2,000. Currently, the only state requiring owners to keep firearms safely stored in is Massachusetts. Both activists who delivered the signatures yesterday have their own harrowing stories of family members dying from unlocked firearms. Carol Manstrom's teenage son used an unsecured firearm in their household and shot himself after a serious breakup. And Paul Kemp lost his brother-in-law when a man used a stolen AR-15 to kill shoppers at Clackamas Mall. The gun wasn't reported missing until after the shooting. This is Claire Shotta with KBOO News. I'm speaking with Rob Fulmer. Rob, how are you today?
I'm very well. Car specialist at the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences at Portland State University, where I've been employed for the last 15 years. I'm also the higher ed bargaining chair for SEIU 503's higher ed, which is 5,000 workers statewide.
Wow. For folks who maybe aren't up to date, can you give some background about why are workers striking? And it doesn't sound like it's just IT. It sounds like it's also custodial workers and other fields. Can you give some background to folks listening?
Absolutely. So our represented workers include people who work in facilities, people who work as secretarial staff and like office coordinators and stuff like that, people who work in financial aids and admissions, groundkeepers. It includes locksmiths and plumbers. It includes all kinds of skilled trades, IT professionals, and other white-collar workers. And across the
in Ontario,
public university,
Weckerly says the summit comes on the heels
members statewide.
Wow. And so would this strike be for all Oregon universities, so University of Oregon?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. It would be across all Oregon's public universities. We all bargain together as one big bargaining unit. We actually, until 1995, used to just be regular state workers, like anyone in the Department of Administrative Services or any other state worker. But we were split off in 1995 into our own bargaining unit, but we are one statewide bargaining unit.
And what's the difference between then and now in terms of financial situation? So income, it sounds like the main reason folks are striking is
lack
of income.
So what happened was... Back in the early 90s, I wasn't here, but this is what I'm told by those who were.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 90s, when the state would settle a contract, it would apply to our workers as well. And so the universities didn't sort of have to separately pay for their classified workers at the local level. That is university by university. When we became our own bargaining unit and became part of the universities, now we're paid out of this sort of same general pot of money that's used to pay faculty and administrators and everyone else, which means that there isn't a dedicated salary pool for us like there is for workers at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
And what the universities used to say was, we wish that we could do better for you university workers, but because you bargain as part of the state, this is the best that we can do. But what we have observed in the intervening 25 years almost is that when state workers settle their contract, we have to fight extremely hard to even get parity with what state workers got, because the work that we do on the university campus is not something that's prioritized. There's essentially an invisible class system when it comes to university campuses, and administrators are at the top, faculty are at the middle, and we're at the bottom.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Claire Rosciato.
After over a decade of being in business, Kenny and Zooks has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The Jewish-themed restaurant has financially restructured after unpaid invoices amounting to more than $184,000. However, Kenny and Zooks owner Ken Gordon says this is a debt that has accrued over the years and will not lead to closing his downtown eatery. In fact, Gordon says he plans to expand his business and adds that, quote, "We are currently profitable on an operational basis and expect to increase that profitability in the future." Though to help mitigate his business debt, Gordon plans to pay back creditors in full over the 8 to 10 years with decreasing monthly payments. Gordon stresses that Kenny and Zooks is in no danger of closing or curtailing its operations.
Homelessness is rising in Portland, and so too are the number of responses made by Portland police to address non-crime situations involving houseless people. These incidents range from a person needing mental health services to finding somewhere to sleep that night. The need to address homelessness in Portland is dire given that, according to a 2017 report by Portland State University, there are 38,000 homeless people in the Portland metro area. Earlier this past summer, Portland City Council announced it would fund a $500,000 project to address what they call low-severity emergency calls. City officials have yet to release a proposed or finalized detailed explanation of what such a program would look like. The intention of the program, however, is to send mental health professionals in response to homeless people needing assistance instead of police being the first responders. This project was largely influenced by a city report which conducted interviews with 180 homeless Portlanders who voiced how they want to be treated in non-criminal situations. Commissioner Joanne Hardesty said in response to the importance of this new project, "The fact that first responders are responding to so many calls that they have absolutely nothing to do with criminal behavior is a disgrace and a waste of public safety resources."
As reported this week in the Oregonian, Portland has the third highest rate of same-sex couples in the country. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, Portland came in as having a little over 2% of its total population being in same-sex relationships. That is more than double the national average of 0.8%. San Francisco was the biggest winner, followed closely by Washington, D.C. at about 2.8%. It was also reported that same-sex couples were more likely to be higher earners than the national average, be interracial households, and childless.
Volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us is SJ.
And you are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and it's our fall membership drive. KBOO is funded by you, our listeners, and we are asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266. Or go to kboo.fm and become a member today. I'm S.J. Oxendine, and I'm excited to be here, and I would like to encourage you to become a member today. And you'll help KBOO share some of the best music in the world, and you'll help pay for the things that make KBOO special, like an extensive music library, knowledgeable and engaging hosts, and up-to-date broadcast and other equipment. Great music may indeed be priceless, but it is not free. Join the cause and become a member today, and you can do that by calling 877-500-5266. If KBOO's music gave you joy, if KBOO makes up the soundtrack of your life, become a member right now and join thousands of fellow music lovers. Call 877-500-5266. You need to call during this show and let KBOO know how much you love the program, the very best in news, and join us now and show us your support for this excellent music. And you can do that by calling 877-500-5266.
A new report shows that drug price hikes are actually outpacing the rate of inflation, which means that crucial prescriptions may become even more difficult to afford. Mary Sherman has more on the story.
For more than a decade, according to a report released today, the research from the ARP Public Policy Institute's RX Price Watch Report series shows that between 2006 and 2017, prescription medications widely used by older Americans increased in price 4.2%. That's double the price increases for other consumer goods and services. Report co-author Lee Purvis attributes the findings primarily to increases for brand name and specialty drugs, which she says more than offset price decreases among generic drugs.
There's really nothing in the U.S. healthcare system to stop drug manufacturers from setting very high prescription drug prices and then increasing them pretty much anytime they want. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is the repercussions of that, where we have these incredibly high-priced products that also are increasing in price every year they're on the market.
The report found in 2017 the average annual cost of one widely used drug was roughly $20,000. Purvis says that cost would have been about $12,000 lower if price changes had been limited to the inflation rate between 2006 and 2017. The research predicts if these trends continue, people could struggle to access and pay for medications they need, which would in turn lead to poor health outcomes and higher health care costs. Purvis adds it's an issue that affects everyone, even those who don't take prescription medications.
So you're either paying for them as a patient at the pharmacy counter, or you're paying for them through your health insurance because they're built into your premiums, your cost sharing. And you're also paying for them as a taxpayer. Public programs pay for prescription drugs, and these high prices are being paid for with your taxes.
The average cost of one commonly prescribed drug in 2017 was about 20% higher than the average annual Social Security retirement income and almost one-third of the median U.S. household income. For Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman.
Yesterday afternoon, Governor Kate Brown called off the proposed special legislative session to fix the death penalty bill.
But we are one statewide bargaining unit.
It was citing a lack of votes. Senate Bill 1013 was passed to limit when the death penalty can be used in Oregon. After the legislative session where the bill was passed, there was some confusion as state lawyers declared that the bill could be applied retroactively, contrary to their previous opinion. Was the bill an attempt to overturn the death penalty? Many wanted a special session to correct the language, but the bill's chief sponsor and others did not want to correct it. In the statement, Governor Brown stated, quote, "While it is clear there is a misunderstanding regarding the intent of the words in Senate Bill 1013, it is also clear there is not sufficient support for a special session to pass a fix," end quote. When announcing my support for a special session, I said that it was conditional on stakeholders and legislators crafting bill language that had the votes to pass. That has not been changed. That has not been achieved. I cannot justify the additional cost and time a special session requires without that support, and I will not be calling the legislature into a special session this month before the law goes into effect. End quote. The law could be corrected sometime in the future.
According to the Washington Post, Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson made offensive comments about transgender people in an internal meeting. While on the topic of homeless shelters, Secretary Carson, according to three people at the meeting, expressed concerns about, quote, big hairy men trying to sneak into women's homeless shelters. The meeting included 50 HUD staffers, and according to sources, many members were surprised and offended by the derisive comments. One female staffer decided to walk out of the room. As the Post reports, this is not the first dismissive comment Ben Carson has made about transgender people. During his presidential campaign in 2016, Carson stated that transgender people should not be in the military and are, quote, abnormal. His voiced opinions on transgender people is reflected in his policy decisions as HUD secretary. He has weakened Obama-era protections for transgender people and said he believes in equal rights, not special rights.
An upcoming summit on water will push for water justice in the Great Lakes. Concerns about water shutoffs in Detroit and the Flint water crisis will be discussed, as well as the water pumping operations done by Nestle in the region. Eric Tegedoff has the story.
Great Lakes residents concerned about water justice are gathering in Ontario next week. The 2019 Water is Life Alliance Summit is on September 28th, and this year's theme is Water Justice in a Climate Emergency. Diane Weckerly with the Michigan Citizens for Water Conservation says water shutoffs in Detroit and the Flint water crisis will be among the topics at the summit. It also will focus on Nestle's water operations in the region. Weckerly notes the company pays $200 a year for the region's fresh water and is proposing to increase its water pumping rate to 400 gallons per minute at one Michigan well.
This complete dichotomy between what industry is able to do, which is to take tons of water, of the public's water, and profit off of it, versus the people of Michigan and Ontario and First Nations people who have no access to water.
Speakers at the event include Claire McClinton, a member of the Democracy Defense League Water Task Force in Flint. The summit starts at 9 a.m. at Western University in London, Ontario. Weckerle says the summit comes on the heels of the global climate strike to demand action on climate change.
We thought at the end of this week of the global climate strike, beginning the 20th, that it would be really good to have a summit to sit down and exchange experience, connect the dots between the struggles that we're waging all around the Great Lakes region and to strategize how to move forward.
On Friday, at least 800 strikes are planned around the country, including more than a dozen in Michigan. The strikes are taking place before the United Nations Climate Action Summit in New York on Monday. Organizers plan to strike again next Friday, September 27th. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and it's our fall membership drive. KBOO is funded by you, our listeners, and we are asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member today. I'm S.J. Oxendine, and I'd like to remind you, you get so much more from KBOO than you do from a streaming service you might occasionally use. With KBOO, you help someone learn to DJ. With KBOO, you work with that DJ to lead an expedition into the world of sound. With KBOO, you power a human experience, and you can help support all of that by calling 877-500-5266. You make KBOO a celebration of the potential for cultural exchange and inclusivity in a way other stations are unable to duplicate, and you can support all of that and show that you're a community member and appreciate it by calling 877-500-5266. There's a place for you to experience a different kind of music on the radio dial, and that's where you're at right now. And you help make that space by calling and supporting right now. You call 877-500-5266. And you help support the community station that means so much to you. I wonder if you really realize how much it does mean to you. Take a second and think about it.
Immigration violations, but that is just what happened to Angelica Davila. Andrea Sears has more on the story.
$75,000 for holding a naturalized U.S. citizen in jail overnight at the request of federal immigration authorities. Angelica Davila, who immigrated to the United States when she was 2, was detained during a minor traffic stop in 2011. Despite having identification, the Northern Regional Police Officer reported her to ICE, which said erroneously that she was in the country illegally and requested her arrest. Sarah Rose with the ACLU of Pennsylvania says the officer had no legal reason to detain Davila in the first place.
Prolonging that roadside stop for 2 hours to investigate Ms. Davila's immigration status, even though he had absolutely no basis to suspect that she was not in the country legally, violated her Fourth Amendment right.
She adds that local police don't have the authority to arrest people for civil offenses, and the vast majority of immigration violations are civil offenses. Immigration detainers, like the one used to detain Davila, are not judicial warrants. They're issued by ICE officials, not judges. So Rose says there are many due process problems. She adds her client was very lucky that ICE caught its own mistake.
She had no idea why she was even being held in jail. She knew she was lawfully present. Nobody was giving her any answers, and she was released the next morning just saying immigration changed their mind.
In Florida alone, ICE has issued 420 immigration detainers for U.S. citizens since 2017, and there have been cases of U.S. citizens actually being deported based on faulty immigration data. The ACLU is also suing the Pennsylvania State Police on behalf of motorists who say they were targeted and detained because they are Latinx. Rose says this settlement should serve as a reminder that police should not be enforcing federal immigration law.
Local law enforcement agencies are not trained in immigration enforcement, and when they act as immigration enforcement, it often leads to racial profiling and Fourth Amendment violations.
In a separate settlement, the Allegheny County Jail, which was also a defendant in Davila's case, agreed that it will no longer hold people based solely on immigration detainers. For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Rosity Native Radio at 6. At 7, it's Popular Ed. The weather tonight will be cloudy with a 20% chance of rain, and tomorrow it will be a high of 70 and a low of 57 with a 40% chance of rain. Today in history, in the year 1928, famed Batman actor Adam West was born. The quote of the day is from Batman himself, Adam West. Quote, "Of what use is a dream if not a blueprint for courageous action?"
A new study out of Georgetown University showed that the uninsured rate of indigenous children is double that of their non-indigenous counterparts. Of the states studied, Arizona had the largest gap. Mark Richardson has more.
A new report finds that American Indian children in Arizona and across the U.S. are more likely to live in poverty, to die in infancy, and to lack health coverage. The study from the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families recommends federal health officials work to lower the uninsured rate for these children in order to reduce their health disparities. Study co-author Lauren Roy Gordner at Georgetown says despite the multiple avenues for coverage, too many Native children are falling through the cracks.
One of the complexities is this sort of
For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Now is your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us now is SJ.
And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 Community Radio, and it's our fall membership drive. KBOO is funded by you, our listeners, and we are asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member today. My name's S.J. Oxendine, and I wonder if you know that when you support KBOO, you support the local music scene with your KBOO membership. You make so much happen, from the shows that focus on Portland-based musicians to live remote broadcasts from local and live music events to in-studio performances. You protect the well-being of local music, And you can do that right now by calling 877-500-5266. And each day, a live and local DJ captivates you with the music you won't hear repeated over and over. You help KBOO air music that is inventive, creative, and informative. So please, right now, show your support. Call 877-500-5266. And if you do, we have some great gifts for you. $120 a month gets you a great Democracy Now! T-shirt. We've got Music Makes the Movement tote bags. And we've got some neat beanies here for a $5 a month donation. And hoodies are available. And that's at a $300 a month. So there's all kinds of things that you can get and do to support. Just call 877-500-5266 and you'll be supporting the best radio station in Portland, Oregon.
Officials at the federal, state, and local levels are reviewing the minority preference contract status of several construction companies whose owners claimed Native ancestry erroneously. With that story and more, it's Megan Kamrick with the National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. Construction companies with dubious claims of Native ownership are coming under review by federal, state, and local officials. The Los Angeles Times reports two U.S. House committees are preparing to review the federal minority preference for construction contracts. The Times reports the U.S. Department of Transportation is also working to identify and halt contracts with any firms whose owners don't belong to state or federally recognized tribes. The paper reports six states are removing minority status from the companies exposed by an LA Times investigation. In June, Times reporters discovered the owners of a number of companies established minority status by claiming membership in self-described Cherokee groups. They're not recognized by any government, and the established Cherokee tribes consider them fraudulent. The Times found the construction firms won contracts worth a total of $300 million. The work included transportation projects, military contracts, and even construction work for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. A court has ordered the government of British Columbia to reconsider an environmental assessment certificate for the expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline. The CBC reports the court ruled on an appeal by the Squamish Nation and the City of Vancouver, who wanted the environmental certificate quashed. They argued it was based on a report and approval from the National Energy Board, but that was later quashed by the Federal Court of Appeal. The BC court did not quash the certificate for the pipeline expansion, but sent it back to the province for reconsideration. The court found the province duly consulted with the Squamish Nation on the project, but Squamish officials said British Columbia Premier John Horgan and his government need to rethink their approach to the pipeline project and respect Indigenous rights by consulting with the Squamish and other First Nations. Federal agencies are dragging their feet when it comes to providing the necessary tools and policies to help tribes develop access to broadband technologies. That's among the criticisms expressed at the U.S. Senate Indian Affairs Committee hearing on tribal broadband in Washington, D.C. Wednesday. Much of the hearing centered around a GAO report released last November showing tribal areas are far behind the rest of the country when it comes to broadband access. Barbara Nelson, chairperson for Gila River Telecommunications in Arizona, expressed her disappointment that the FCC has known about the barriers tribes face for years, but has done little to help solve them.
The FCC has authority to pursue all of these proposals right now, but seems to lack a will to pursue them. GAO notes, FCC officials told us they have reviewed public comments to the proposed rulemaking, but have no current plans to take further action. This is a very disappointing dose of reality.
Nelson also says proper consultation between the federal government and tribes is essential for getting broadband policies right. The Senate committee hearing comes in advance of a tribal broadband summit scheduled for early next week. In Minneapolis, the Red Lake Nation broke ground recently on a new affordable housing complex. Minnesota Public Radio reports the $42 million apartment building will include a Red Lake Nation embassy designed to serve members who are not living on the reservation in northern Minnesota. There will also be a culturally specific healthcare center and a community space. Earlier this year, the site was used as an emergency shelter for more than 150 people, most of whom were Native American. Red Lake Tribal Secretary Sam Strong told NPR the new development is the start of a path toward healing. He says many of his tribal members ended up in the city through boarding schools and policies like relocation that moved people to urban centers. Minneapolis has the largest number of Red Lake Band members living off the reservation. NPR reports there are more than 15,000 Native Americans living in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
While some may consider swamps to be squishy, dirty spots to avoid, on today's episode of Current Cast, show hosts discuss the environmental necessity to keep marshes and swamps thriving.
Swamps, marshes, and other wetland wonderlands on this Current Cast. People once considered wetlands useless as little more than soggy ground waiting to be drained and put to better use. Now we recognize wetlands as valuable. Besides being quiet places of safety and serene seclusion for innumerable animal, bird, and plant species, wetlands function for people in amazing ways. They trap and hold raging floodwaters, replenish both groundwater and downstream water bodies, slow soil erosion, and filter out pesky pollutants. Development projects have devoured millions of acres of wetlands over the past 100 years, so it's important that we preserve and protect the wetlands that remain. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
The Connecticut gun manufacturer Colt has suspended the production of AR-15 civilian sales. While many might connect this as a response to U.S. citizens dying in mass shootings where AR-15s were used, Colt says the decision is not political. Instead, the company states that it is the result of market forces. Colt's president and chief executive officer, Dennis Viu, says military and law enforcement contracts are absorbing the company's manufacturing capacity for rifles, as Oregon Live reports. In a statement, VU said, "We want to assure you that Colt is committed to the Second Amendment, highly values its customers, and continues to manufacture the world's finest quality firearms for the consumer market."
Republican primary challenger, former Illinois Representative Joe Walsh, says he is challenging Trump because of the president's pattern of lies and because of his interest in the financial health of the U.S. With more on this story and a few others, it's Lily Bulkey with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa. Question, is this a Republican or a Democrat?
I'm tired of waking up every morning and the President of the United States is insulting a regular American.
The answer might surprise you.
I had hoped this year that a Republican would have stepped up to say what I believe, that I think he's unfit.
Former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh was the second Republican to challenge President Donald Trump for the GOP's nomination. Former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld announced his campaign back in April, but Walsh said Weld's campaign is not making the case strongly enough that President Trump is unfit for the job.
I was a Tea Party congressman. All of this debt and all of the deficits. Social Security is going to be bankrupt. Medicare is going to be bankrupt. These things I really cared about.
Walsh criticizes a vast number of President Trump's actions, including his foreign policy. Houthi rebels in Yemen claimed responsibility for the attacks last weekend on oil fields in Saudi Arabia, but U.S. officials have reportedly identified the source as southern Iran. Here's what Walsh had to say about this situation.
We know we can't believe anything the Saudis say. We know we can't believe anything the heads of Iran say. Here's what's weird, though. You can't believe a thing the President of the United States says, and the whole world knows that.
Walsh said that if he were to become president, though, the American economy would be his top priority.
I'm much more interested in the economic stuff. Am I a social conservative? Yeah, I'm pro-life. I'm pro-gun. But it's the debt and the financial state of America that's always animated me.
But for now, he has his eyes on the early states.
If we can do really well in Iowa and scare the living daylights out of Donald Trump in Iowa, I think that would be awesome.
Stepping back for a bit of history, the Iowa Democratic caucuses became, quote, the first in the nation in 1972, followed by the GOP 4 years later. States periodically jockey for a position because the current system gives smaller states more clout. In the last election, Republican Mike Huckabee and Democrat Martin O'Malley both dropped out the night of the Iowa caucuses, not getting enough support. Grinnell College professor Barb Trish notes that Iowa and other early states like New Hampshire are small.
And then add on to the fact that they're not particularly representative of the entire nation. The diversity in Iowa is quite limited. You know, on the other hand, people who tout that this is a good thing will say things like, you know, Iowans take it very seriously. They have over time become very experienced and savvy about it.
But Iowa also has a state law that requires the parties to make sure Iowa's caucuses are held at least 8 days before any other states. So when Nevada and Florida moved up their primaries in 2008, Iowa remained first. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
We don't fill up your newscast with ads, but we do need your support to keep this local newscast coming to your airwaves and web stream. Joining us now is SJ to talk more about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
And this is KBOO 90.7 Community Radio, and we're in the middle of our fall membership drive. We're trying to convince you that KBOO is funded by you and our listeners, and we're asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member today. My name's S.J. Oxendine, and I'm wondering that if you ever considered this is just about the number of dollars we aim to raise, we need you on supporting this incredible programming. Are you in? Your membership is an awesome way to get involved with KBOO and to support music that's available to everyone anytime, just the way that it should be. Take a second and donate now before you get busy with your life and everything that you have to get done today. KBOO is your community radio service, and we're asking you to call 877-500-5266 and support everything that's so important to you on the radio station that you like so much. Your gift and those of others keep all the music you love on the air. And because members are the biggest source of funding for KBOO, your contribution is essential to making sure that the music gets back to you. KBOO relies on you to make great music happen every single day. So please, be generous. Call 877-500-5266 and show how much you really, really care about KBOO. Well, let's talk a minute about the things you can get for your donation. We've got great t-shirts. We've got a tote bag. There's a neat beanie. Looks like it's really solid for winter coming on. We've got t-shirts and a real nice warm hoodie. And these are all things that you can get by being a supporter of KBOO and calling 877-500-5266 and do your best to support. You don't have to give anything that's in particular. Just do your best and show that you care.
How long are you going to be going on?
New Mexico has announced a plan to make tuition to all four-year colleges free to students regardless of family income. Nearly half of all states have some kind of free tuition for two or four-year college students, Oregon included. But New Mexico's plan goes even further, extending free college to students who can afford the stickier price. The program still requires legislative approval. New Mexico is one of the poorest states in the union. However, they plan to use climbing profits from oil sales to fund the free college measure. Some education experts, presidential candidates, and policymakers consider universal free college to be a squandering of scarce public dollars, which might be better spent offering more support to the neediest students. college and student debt have emerged as fundamental issues in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have promised to make all public colleges and universities free.
Towns on the southeastern coast of the U.S. are rethinking the way they do development based on climate change. Climate change will bring more frequent and greater intensity hurricanes, and in North Carolina, local governments are developing action plans to change their land use. Nadia Ramlagan has the story.
This month marks the one-year anniversary of Hurricane Florence, and experts are gathering in Raleigh to discuss how North Carolina's coastal communities and low-lying areas can prepare for the future. Jay McLeod helps local governments develop climate adaptation plans. He says rising sea levels and a warming atmosphere that holds more water are triggering more intense storms, so coastal areas need to have a game plan.
Previous land use, development, and investment decisions, particularly on the coast, were made prior to our current understanding of the challenges we're facing, and so communities across the state are reevaluating their previous planning efforts.
The September 26th event is being hosted by the Nature Conservancy North Carolina and the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies. McLeod points out that local governments need to start considering climate risk when it comes to making decisions about where to focus growth, investment, and development.
As storms hit and places need to rebuild and reinvest, they really need to have a plan in place that's been reviewed and vetted by the community and that people can get behind in order to make sure that future investments are not continuing to focus resources and value into places that are at risk.
Andrew Huff with the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies says the insurance industry is now taking a more proactive approach to assisting communities in preparing before disasters hit and is advocating for stronger building codes.
I think our number one concern is trying to end what we call the endless cycle of destruction, where basically, you know, as it stands right now, many homes are built after disasters to the same subpar standards that led to their destruction in the first place.
Last fall, President Donald Trump signed the Disaster Recovery Reform Act, which allows communities to use federal funding in order to boost infrastructure resilience in areas affected by a major disaster. For Public News Service, I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
Purdue Pharmacy has filed for bankruptcy in the face of nearly $10 billion worth of lawsuits from around the country. The pharmaceutical company that is largely responsible for the ongoing opiate crisis is moving towards bankruptcy. Not because they have run out of money, but in order to shield themselves from the massive tsunami of litigation heading towards them. The opioid crisis led to the first time the American census documented a dip in the life expectancy since the Spanish flu epidemic of 1913.
Merriam-Webster has added the singular pronoun they to refer to a single person whose gender identity is non-binary to the dictionary. Jillian Brandstetter, a media relations manager for the National Center for Transgender Equality, sees Merriam-Webster's decision as fitting into a larger normalization of non-binary identities. She said, quote, "Overall, you're seeing workplaces, schools, and hospitals recognize the current system of only offering male and female isn't working for a lot of people. Opponents have argued that they is improper because it is a plural pronoun. However, they had actually been in consistent use as a singular pronoun since the late 1300s. According to Merriam-Webster, the development of the singular they mirrors the development of the singular you from the plural you. This new addition enshrines a further evolution of the term. Instead of they referring to a person whose gender isn't known or isn't important in context, the new definition refers to someone whose gender is known but does not identify as a male or female." Emily Brewster, a senior editor at Merriam-Webster, told NBC News the choice was obvious. Quote, "We are always aiming to reflect usage. It's very clear that this is fully established in the language at this point."
In Guatemala, the act of boiling water to purify it for drinking is having consequences on air quality and pollution. One company is working to fix that. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In rural Guatemala, many people boil their water to prevent waterborne disease. That often requires tending an open fire inside the home for hours a day. These fires cause dangerous indoor air pollution and a lot of carbon pollution. To help people access clean drinking water without boiling it, a company called Ecofiltro sells low-cost countertop water filters.
There's a measurable and definite significant greenhouse gas reduction when you don't have to have a fire going to boil water all the time.
Mark LaCroix is with Natural Capital Partners, which helps track how the filters are being used.
We have one of our employees running around Guatemala in a pickup truck monitoring. We're constantly monitoring the filters to make sure they're working and that the families are using them correctly.
His company also helps other businesses invest in projects like this one as a way of offsetting some of their own carbon emissions. In the case of Ecofiltro, the investments help reduce the cost of the filters, making them affordable for rural families. He says over time, people can actually save money by buying less firewood. So it's a purchase that pays off financially, for people's health, and for the climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
You're listening to an hour-long... Oh, I forgot. There it is. You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Claire Rosciotto, Grace Ann Smith, and Janai Boyer. The producer is Claire Rosciotto, our engineer is Ted Jones, and the KBOO Evening News Director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomath at K2A2BH on 104.3 FM, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM, K220HR. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Claire Rosciotto. Coming up next is Rose City and Nature Radio at 6 p.m. But first, we go to SJ to talk about supporting people-powered community radio, the only 100% volunteer-hosted station in Oregon.
And you are listening to that station, and that station is KBOO 90.7 Community Radio, and it is our fall membership. KBOO, you know, is funded by you, our listeners, and we are asking you to step up to the plate right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member today. My name is S.J. Oxendine, and I'd like to remind you that you, the listeners, make KBOO happen. You help us work to improve our communities, and now we need your help to strengthen those efforts. Invest in this community building experiment, and you can do that by calling 877-500-5266. And you know, KBOO encourages local resiliency and bolsters community organizing. Now, we're asking you to make KBOO more resilient by becoming a KBOO member. Please show your support. Call 877-500-5266 and show how much you care about KBOO. And also keep in mind the theme for this year's fall fundraiser. It's called Mike to the People. Sure, it's a catchy phrase, and it also means a great deal. Where else are you going to get community radio that is so important to you and the life that you live and the music that entertains you? And where else are you going to get a station that goes out into the clubs and records the music that maybe some people can't go to clubs for and bring it back and put it on the radio that will entertain you? And here's why we are here. Over the past 49 years, we've created something quite important together. We have the opportunity to strengthen what we have built, and we would like to get you to help us. Please call 877-500-5266 and show how much you appreciate the station. You and thousands of other listeners in your community truly rely on KBOO. Giving today will help keep training free and media accessible to the least heard among us in your community. And that's what KBOO does. They're here to help everybody who hasn't got a voice for themselves. So please call 877-500-5266 and show your support for the station that shows its support for you.
Mira, niñita, ahí te voy a llevar a ver la luna brillando en el mar. Mira hacia el cielo y olvidas el ánguido temor que fue permanente emoción. Y papel sellado en la piel.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 p.m. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Daily Cafe, located at 902 Northwest 13th Avenue. Open daily from breakfast to late lunch. Daily Cafe serves new American breakfast and lunch, along with wine spirits. Lunch was provided by Thai Pod, located at 2015 Northeast Broadway Street. Serving a full Thai cuisine menu, Thai Pod is open for lunch and dinner. Dinner was provided by Atlas Pizza, located at 710 North Killingsworth Street. Open from 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. or later every day. More information at atlaspizzapdx.com. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 14th annual Dancing in the Square American Indian Day powwow on Friday, September 27th from noon to 7 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. Dancing in the Square American Indian Day powwow is a traditional showcase and celebration.